You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Lissy. Truth be told, you'd be hard-pressed to come across someone who's lived as fulfilling of a life as Lissy has. She's one of those people who's only ever been able to be herself, and it's because of that attitude that her music has constantly flourished throughout the years. Her latest offering, Castles, is her most personal project yet. If you're familiar with her music, you're probably asking, most personal? But how? But trust me when I say that Castles is an album that reminds you of the importance of staying true to yourself. And if you're unfamiliar with Lissy, then don't worry. And trust me when I say that you're just about to fall in love. This is the 405 Exchange with Lissy. Enjoy. So I kind of wanted to start this a bit differently because it's crazy. I somehow stumbled on an old cover you did of Pursuit of Happiness by Kid Cudi just a few days ago.
Okay.
And somehow I had never seen that before. And then I also saw that you got to perform it with him live in Paris.
Yeah, totally. Which all was kind of a shock and a whirlwind and a coincidence. And it's funny to me that you just discovered that, because I feel like that was sort of the entry point that a lot of people in the United States even discovered me was through that cover.
Really?
Yeah, that's like the thing people kind of knew me for, at least in the U.S., my band and I doing that. Yeah, and it was actually kind of like a long and winding tale. But
long and winding tales are good.
Yeah, no, I covered Pursuit of Happiness. It really did a lot for my visibility, which, and I love Kid Cudi, was a huge fan of his, so, you know, was grateful to him for writing the song. But there ended up being this misunderstanding where I had made some comment in an interview like, oh, you know, whenever I cover a song, I try to make it my own, you know, like, not in terms of like, make it better or that I think it's mine, but more just like internalize what it means to me.
Yeah.
And then he ended up misinterpreting that and thinking I was sort of saying like, oh, well, like it's my song kind of thing.
Oh.
And then he like tweeted about it. And then all of his like followers who love him so much sent me like really mean tweets.
Oh no.
And I am like not equipped for that because I'm not like a big enough artist that I have to deal with that kind of stuff. So it was really hurtful and I was super bummed out. So I reached out to him. I was like, oh, I hope you give me an opportunity to explain that. It was kind of just taken out of context, you know?
Yeah.
So we ended up having this like really great conversation where he totally got it, that he understood where I was coming from and that I wasn't trying to like act like, oh, it's my song and I'd do it better. Like, not what I meant at all. Like, cause I think he's just such a genius. So then it was a good misunderstanding because it led to us actually becoming friendly and being able to be in touch with one another. I haven't talked to him in years now, but kind of through the whole experience of that misunderstanding and that being the thing that brought us in touch, did stay in touch. And so coincidentally, I don't even know how we figured it out that like he was in Paris when I was in Paris, and he's like, oh, I might come down to your show, and then just like jumped on stage, and it was like, like such a dream come true. It was so cool. It all happened so fast though, you know. It was like, oh, we're gonna do this song, okay. Like I would have changed the key or something for him, but he really to me is just like the true artist. Like,
he's one of those artists that you think of that really bleeds for his art, even though he's, like, such a commercially successful artist. He puts himself out there.
Yeah, he really goes to his depths and gets in touch with those places, I think. And I think that's why I related to that song so much, you know, and people relate to his music, because you can feel that, the kind of pain and longing, which I think I put pain and longing into my songs, too. So I relate to artists when I feel that spirit in their music, but... So that was a long answer to your question.
No, please. Long answers are always preferred. You know, it's great to be sat with you again. I saw you last time when you were touring for My Wild West, and what a fucking album that was, you know? Like, and now you're back with your new album, Castles.
Mm-hmm.
The first question has to be, where were you at the end of touring My Wild West, specifically, creatively speaking?
Well, I had an interesting, but, like, you know, pleasant experience with the whole My Wild West thing, because it was really an album about leaving California and that I decided to move back to the Midwest, and I was independent and I was sort of almost had resigned myself to, like, I don't really care what anyone thinks about my music. I just know I can make a living if I play solo shows, and that, like, made me feel so liberated. Yeah. And then I ended up making an album and putting it out. And but so it was interesting doing the My Wild West thing, because I borrowed bands. Like, when I was in Europe, this band, the traveling band, opened for me, and then they also learned my songs. And then similarly in the U.S., Grizzly Adams, New Jersey-based artist, he opened for me. We were connected through our booking agent, and it was like, then his band learned all my songs. So it was fun, but there wasn't a lot of consistency in how I was presenting myself, and I was doing a lot of duo and solo stuff. So yeah. As I wound down doing my Wild West, you know, I'd found myself really in a pretty frustrating relationship that wasn't really bringing out my best self. I was feeling like so much had cleared up for me in my Wild West, and so much of, like, figuring out what kind of person I want to be and how I want to live my life and kind of what defines success for me. And so I still retained a lot of those lessons I learned through making my Wild West, but kind of coming back to Castles, like, I kind of slipped up a little bit. I got a little dark again, and I and I found myself in a relationship that just really, it was like I knew what I was doing. I recognized my patterns, but yet I couldn't break them, and I couldn't find, like, the self-love almost to, like, get out of the situation. You know, so I think a lot of Castles really reflects my personal life at the time. Yeah. And sonically it reflects kind of almost the limitations I had in my travels and on my farm of, like, I don't have, like, a big proper studio, so I was getting people to come with, like, laptops and Pro Tools and synthesizers and, well, let's just write a song to a beat. And then put the live drums on it later, you know? So it kind of changed my sound a little, too.
Wow. Yeah. That definitely came across when I listened to it. And, you know, what I love about what you described in regards to finding yourself in that kind of dark place in regards to relationship, I think what I heard within Castles when I listened to it is very much, it sounded like you realized that there was an act of surrendering to yourself. And in a lot of ways, I think a lot of people could relate to that, because almost just the very act of being in a relationship has so much to do with surrendering yourself almost to a person.
Yeah. Well, and I think in my case, you know, my surrender more needed to be to whatever, if you believe in God or a higher power or something outside of yourself, and, like, believing in something bigger than yourself, that, you know, it's like I couldn't trust myself to make the right decisions all of a sudden. And it was like sort of trying to find that peace and that release of just letting go and stop trying to control everything and, like, confront myself and be able to kind of have the surrender more to just something bigger than myself, but ultimately not to the person I was in the relationship with, because it was not it wasn't good from the beginning, and I'm not sure why it lasted so long. It was a kind of a twisted experience, to be honest, but I got an album out of it. And I think bigger than that, you know, the lessons that we learn is, like, I think a lot of Castles, there is a darkness in it, but there's a lot of, like, solutions and hope too, and optimism, like, sort of, it's just the wake-up call of, like, you know, you need to take a good hard look at yourself, girl, and, like, you know, go into your darkness to find your light and find your have this some self-awareness and sense of humor about, you know, like, I don't know how familiar you've gotten with the record, but, like, Love Blows, of, like, you know, and all the silly girls keep singing, I need your love and I can't live without your love, and yeah. You know, like, there's a song called Crazy Girl where it's just sort of like, you know, everyone's like, you gotta leave that boy behind. It's like, I can't, like, yeah. I know I should, but I can't. It's like, he put a spell on me. You know, so there is, like, a sort of sense of, I think, awareness and recognition, yet continuing to, like, play out the same behavior. So it's sort of like this, sorry, I'll keep trying to ask me another question.
No, it's fine, it's fine. Seriously, like, keep, honestly, like I said before, going off tangents, totally okay.
Good, well, yeah.
Expanding on tangents, okay, also.
Yeah.
But what I want to ask you next is, it actually correlates to all that. I mean, I know people must always ask about your farm, I know people read about it and they probably go like, oh, what's it like? But something that I find myself really curious about in regards to the fact that you have a place like that that you can return to, I wonder what it must have been like for you to like tour the way you did for Mile Wild West and go back to that place. Like, does it do something for you almost in like, I don't want to get too hokey, but almost like in a spiritual type of way, having a space like that?
No, that's not hokey at all. I mean, I'm all about spirit. So I'm always open to that. I think it does. You know, I think it also, though, I have to be careful because I can be very all or nothing. So it's like, I can be out on the road just like, go, 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 go. Like, kind of like living in chaos. And then go home and just find myself for a certain period of time just being like super lazy. And like drinking too much wine, watching too much TV. But then I'll get kind of bored and then I'll get kind of like into a good routine.
Yeah.
Which is a lot, like, you know, is... Even if it's just sitting on the porch all day, it's like being able to be outside and not, and it's very quiet and it's, you can see the stars at night and like, you know, my neighbors are friendly. They're not super close to me, but I, you know, they come through on a tractor. I know that's like legitimately from time to time to like drop hay off because I let my, well, kind of rent my neighbor, like he stores his hay in my hoop building. So I like, I'll see him go by and like,
that's amazing.
Hey. Or the guy that comes by to check on the bees. But it, I mean, what is that like? It's good. I think I'm still figuring it out because I have a lot of things I want to do with my property. It was like, you know, I got it in June of 2015 and did all of this stuff with my Wild West coming out February of 2016. But my house was like still under construction. So I didn't even move into my house till May of 2016, which was kind of like right in the middle of all the my Wild West stuff.
I think when I met you was around either like April or May of that year.
Yeah, no, like I hadn't actually moved my things into the house. Like it was there, but it was like not to the place that I needed it to be at, like in order to like really move my things in. So I had spent time there, like where I just like camp and hang out because I have a lot of land.
Yeah.
No, but I think it still remains to be seen. Like, I mean, Castles is a good first example of like, I think being able to use sort of like having like a limited setup as far as the studio goes and how that sort of influenced my sound. Yeah. But I do want to build like a proper studio. And I think the not only the solitude and like the quiet, but also I think that the doing other stuff is good for my creativity. Like if people would come to write songs and hang out with me and work on music, you know, I loved that. It wasn't just like, okay, we're in the studio from like 9 to 5, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, come to my house for a few days. I'm gonna go plant some flowers. I'm gonna, you know, make some food. I'm gonna run into town. It was almost like when I would do the other activities, like do the dishes or cook some food, that I would get so many ideas and then I would take them into the studio rather than like sitting in the studio like, oh God, I gotta come up with an idea fast, you know. So I think that the new environment is conducive to like being a natural way of being creative because the pressure is not really on. It's just all about feeling it.
Yeah.
And when you talk about the spiritual thing, I guess it's like, I do feel like the closest I feel to my spirituality is really in nature. Like there are those moments on like a perfect Iowa day with skies blue with the white puffy clouds and everything's so green that you do think, like, this is probably what heaven looks like. It's just so still.
So serene.
Yeah, so serene. And sometimes in June, like, these little floaty things, you know, little seed pods will float through the air. And, I mean, like, if you've ever seen Field of Dreams, have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
That's in Iowa. I live not far from where Field of Dreams is.
No way.
And I think the character's like, is this heaven? And I'm like, no, it's Iowa.
You know, it's interesting because we've only been talking for a bit, but I think that was probably the second time you brought up how you had to work with quite a limited setup in regards to Castles. When I listened to it, though, that didn't really come across at all. When you listened to the album for the first time when it was done, did it surprise you how it sounded?
Well, so I guess I didn't round out and finish that whole story for you because a lot of the seeds were planted sort of around, like, Blood and Muscle, Castles, Feels Good, Sand, and Meet Me in the Mystery were all kind of like birthed at my house, but then were taken by the producer slash people that I was kind of working with,
yeah.
back to a real studio.
Oh, okay.
Where drums and guitar were added. So it was more just for me in the way that I created, you know, normally maybe I'd sit down behind a guitar, mm-hmm. which I had a lot of guitars at my disposal, but it was just, I don't know, it was almost more like, just give me like a chord progression on a keyboard. Like, I didn't usually write that way before. So there was something in the sort of like having people swing through that sort of kicked off the creation. But then the album as a whole was primarily mixed by a guy named Liam Howe, a producer in London. So I spent time in London where I was writing some of the songs, but also taking some of the ideas that I'd started and sort of getting them fleshed out. But, you know, oddly, I feel like it's a sonically big album, but it's not a super produced album in that there's anything happening that doesn't need to happen, but there's like a lot of ambience.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of atmosphere and sounds that aren't necessarily like, oh, we put five electric guitars on it. You know, it's more like there's sounds, but it's quite minimal. But so I didn't mean to mislead you. It wasn't all made.
Oh, no, of course.
Yeah, it wasn't all made at the farm. No, I started some things there and was able to like write a lot of the lyrics there.
You know, I want to
get a few vocals.
I want to ask you about that in regards to London, because on the last, when you were doing My Wild West, the album was particularly received very well over there, and you got to go back a handful of times. And, you know, I remember that very vividly, like how beautiful it was the way you were received. What was it like for you being able to go back there, especially to, like, not just playing the bigger shows, but to go back there and kind of work on Castles as well?
Well, you know, London has always just, I mean, I've been going there since like 2007. I was signed to Columbia in the UK, and that was where my major deal was out of the UK. So my first album, Catching a Tiger, came out in 2010 and was like really well received. So I was doing well in the UK since 2010, really. Yeah. But it was super validating, because after I got dropped by Sony after my second album,
yeah.
And making My Wild West essentially on my own, and then taking the finished product to a company that, you know, Cooking Vinyl over there, who distributed and marketed for me.
Yeah.
It was great, because it, you know, it did as well as my other albums did. Yeah. And so I felt like that was just such a testament to, like, you know, A, like, the help I did get with my label and the amount of, like, touring I put in to, like, keep going and keep people aware of what I was up to, but to my awesome fan base, like, such a testament to their, I feel like, faith in me and their loyalty that, yeah, when I went back with My Wild West and it was independent and I didn't have the same kind of muscle behind me, yeah. I still had this, like, great reception, and people turned up and were still excited for me and
yeah.
and rooting for me and supporting me. So, and going back to London over the summer, I mean, I just have spent so much time there now. It just feels so comfortable. Like, it's probably one of my favorite places to write songs, and spent, you know, a few weeks kind of overseeing like the final mixing stages of the record this past summer. And, you know, just, like, when I first started going there, I was like, it's so foreign, everything's different. Like, why don't they ever have ice? Like, you know, just little things. Like,
coffee shouldn't be this small.
Yeah, why are the halls so narrow? Why are there so many fire doors at the hotels? Why do I have to go through, like, 7 doors to get to my room? There was always, like, weird things that I was like, this is different. But now I'm so used to it that it just feels very... And I have so many nice friends there now.
That's amazing.
Especially creative friends that I can write with. Yeah, so it feels good. The UK relationship has been, like, a special one, for sure.
Yeah. Let's jump into the music. You know, one of the songs that stuck out to me a lot, and I've really been dying to ask you about this song, is Blood and Muscle. And mm-hmm. it's such a special song. And I love that it's one of those tracks that you decide to share with people first when you're, like, releasing songs leading up to the album. I'd love to hear the story behind this song.
Yeah, so that's one of the ones, actually, that I did record at my house. So a producer by the name of AG, who I'd met once but didn't know super well. She came from LA to visit me on my farm in Iowa, and, you know, hadn't really spent, she'd been through the Midwest, but hadn't, like, really spent, like, a chunk of days just sitting around a farm before. So I think she thought it was pretty relaxing as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, we wrote like 4 songs in 4 days. We just were like killing it. And we weren't even really working the whole time. That was like, I was going out in the yard and being like, oh, I've got to plant these flowers. And it was like, you know, springtime. So there was a lot I was sort of, it was the first, you know, few weeks I was actually able to get outside and like start doing stuff
yeah.
in my yard. So I was like, you know, would pop outside and then come back in. And I think that influenced, like, the lyrics of Blood and Muscle. You know, at the time, I was still sort of dealing with the same relationship that had kind of decided that week, like, I can't do this anymore. Like, don't call me. Don't talk to me. Like, yeah. I can't talk to you anymore.
Stop taking my time.
Like, I need to unfollow you on Instagram. Like, this is serious. No, and so I was kind of really tender from that, and I think, you know, ultimately Adrian, or AG, who I wrote it with and who produced the track, you know, she had these sort of titles in mind, and like Blood and Muscle was a title she had, and it really resonated with me because I felt like, you know, I want a love that's made of blood and muscle, like something that's real, like someone that shows up, like something that's like tough and alive, you know, and has, you know, that quality.
What is that?
Oh, I think there's somebody on like a...
Oh, someone is working?
Maybe. Is that going to mess up your recording?
No, it'll be okay. If it comes up again, we'll do something. Oh, yeah, someone definitely is working.
Okay. Yeah, there's...
Oh, hold on. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, and go.
I think with Blood and Muscle, it's the idea of like something that's real and alive and like, you know, you can feel it and you can taste it and you can see it and you can grab it. Like, you know, I think sometimes in relationships, there's so much illusion and projecting of what you want rather than on what is. And so I think I was at this place in my life and with this relationship that was ending where it was really like, you know, this proclamation of like, you know, I want a love that's made of blood and muscle. And I think the environment of like, you know, the crows fly higher and higher, you know, that there, you know, there were crows like flying around outside. And so it's kind of nice to like look out the window or go sit on the porch and and embody that feeling and that longing of wanting that kind of love, and taking in the environment and the setting really did inspire like some of the lyrics in the song.
Yeah, and I also wanted to ask about the video because, I mean, it's shot so beautifully. And
thank you.
I think what I really loved about it, I was struck when I watched it the first time, was how your presence and your personality is conveyed so well in that video. Do you remember what that shoot day was like for you?
I do. You know, that was, I like loved how well people reacted to that video, and I'm so proud of it because it was fairly like low key. I have been fortunate enough, I found this guy up in Minneapolis, which is kind of the closest big city to me, a guy named Lance Conrad, who has a studio. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I need to shoot this video. And I have this idea in my head that I want to get one of those pianos that like plays itself, but I have no idea, like, how do you get one of those?
Yeah, right? Like, that's like one of those things you have to Google for.
Yeah, and I was like, maybe someone in town that like knew someone who like was in Arizona for the winter, yeah. But like maybe they could let me in their house and I could use it, but they didn't know how to program it, and it was like, so, of course, Lance, who's just helped me find my band, and he's just been incredible. He, Taylor Lewin, a like videographer, director he works with sometimes, they, at the University of Minnesota, found that there was one of those beautiful pianos that plays itself. I forget, a Diskenheimer, I can't remember.
I'm sure both of those were like better than how most people would attempt it.
Yeah.
That's insane though. What are the odds?
Yeah, so it was great. And they kind of knew the guy who oversaw it. So it was really in a rehearsal room at the University of Minnesota's Ferguson Hall of Music.
Yeah.
And, you know, got there, got kind of glammed up, which is not very normal for me, but I thought it would be fun to do. And then, so really the concept of like, you know, having it be black and white and then burst into this magnificent color, I mean, is sort of to like show that like saturation out of the black and white of like, you know, that tangible, like bright infusion of like realness.
Yeah.
And I thought that they did such a great job. I mean, we shot it so pleasantly and quickly, and everyone was just lovely. And, you know, I mean, it was like...
It's like the best you could ask for.
Best I could ask for. The edit was super sweet, like they were super cool with how they were like communicating. I mean, it was a very pleasant experience. So
it's really cool.
I remember it just being like a nice day and everyone being cool.
Yeah, you know, talk to me about Best Days. What intrigued me about that track is the lyrics almost reminded me, you know, it's interesting because this kind of correlates to something you brought up before when we first started talking about like playing with beats, but something about Best Days almost felt like a rap song, particularly in how you're telling your story within the song. Like, not necessarily like the look. I want to like definitely clarify for people listening. It does not sound like a rap song, but just like the way you're presenting the lyrics.
The rhythm of the melody.
And also just like the lyrics. So that doesn't sound too crazy to you then?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I have an older song called When I'm Alone, and it is kind of a da 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 da, you know, where it is more of a. That more rhythmic delivery, which I guess is sort of like a flow, like a little bit of an MC vibe, but not really.
Kinda,
but
yeah.
I can see where you're coming
but
from.
But I'm just so curious about what inspired you, the way you wrote the song, particularly like both the lyrics and the delivery, because I feel like the way you did it there is so particular.
I wish I could tell you that there was like a whole plan around it, but before I wrote my Wild West and I was getting ready to move, I sat down and just played. You know, it's the whole song's basically three chords.
Oh.
Sat down and played the chords and the melody and everything. I had the melody and all that and the concept of the best days. And that was one of those songs, like, you know, where if you talk about spirit or if you believe in that, where it's like, I wasn't even trying to do that. It just all of a sudden it was like, oh, all of this just came to me. And I think I was sort of considering, you know, and considering like what is next. You know, are my best days behind me? Like, is this it for me? Am I just old now? Or is, like, anything new gonna happen? like, you know?
You really find yourself thinking that.
I do from time to time. I still do.
I think it's human.
It is human. And I, you know, I get a touch of the melancholy. I mean, I can just, from one minute to the next, be, like, super optimistic and positive, and then I can be, like, so, like, ooh, you know? But I think a lot of people are like that. That's just life. But anyway, so in answering your question, that song just had, like, come to me, and then I didn't really finish it, so it didn't make it on my Wild West. You know, I didn't really have the message and the words totally done. And I finished it in May of 2016, around the time I moved into my house. I went down to Nashville, finished it with a guy named Ian Fitchick and Daniel Tashin. I kind of was like, check this thing out, and they helped me sort of drive her home.
Yeah.
So I think that the delivery, you know, really was kind of more of an reaction to the stream of consciousness way that it came to me, where it was like just rolling off my tongue more than, you know, me meticulously like, oh, this is the melody and those are the words. It was like, you know, it sort of just like trickled out. But I think... Yes, that basically answers your
question.
No,
that kind of does. And that phrase of words.
Days,
no, yeah, well, that phrase of words, a stream of consciousness, that definitely kind of goes into what I was trying to describe in terms of... It just reminds me, like, not to hammer it too home, but, like, I remember when I was listening to it, and it reminded me of, like, the way I feel most rappers convey their stories in a song, where it's like, this happened, this happened, this is how who I am. And, like,
yeah.
I thought that was so cool. You're able to nail that.
I love that. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a pretty literal, straightforward writer, and maybe Best Days... compared to some of my other songs have it, but it has a little more imagery in it where it is very like directly like, you know, I could have stayed in college, but I didn't want to. I dropped out. I moved to California. Like,
like you're definitely like walking someone through the story, but it doesn't feel like you're walking them through it at the same time.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I think it's so fun to get to hear, you know, intelligent, thoughtful people's reactions to what I do because I'm
I never
would have thought that.
Well, tell me this. I also wanted to ask you what it was like to work on a song like Boyfriend, because that's a song to me that felt like it exists from a totally different world than my Wild West.
Yeah, I mean, Boyfriend was actually a real early on, like, indicator for me. And a lot of that, you know, and with some of the change in sonic quality, you know, really has to do with Liam Howe, who mixed a lot of the album.
Yeah.
And so a guy named Martin Kraft, who I wrote a lot of songs in my Wild West with, kind of brought me to Liam as like, we should all write together and just like record, because I really wanted to record while I was writing.
Yeah.
I don't know for what you know about the biz or something, but you know, when I did have a deal, it was like, you go and write with a bunch of people, then like once you have enough songs, then you go and record them. But now that I can do whatever the fuck I want, I'm like, I just want to write, like, record while we're writing. And then we can come back and, like, finish it. But I don't want to, like, re-record the song, like, 7 times. Like,
no.
I just want to stay spontaneous and in the moment.
Essentially,
and,
like, how a band would do it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and maybe I should have just insisted on doing it that way in the past, but, like, I couldn't get, like, a budget to record approved unless I could prove I had enough quality songs.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's sort of when you're asking somebody else for money to make a record, I can understand why they felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so with Boyfriend was, you know, I went last April, so not even a year ago, to go to London and work with Martin and Liam. And Boyfriend was just real, like, born of, like, a hang.
Yeah.
Like, we were feeling that one. That one's got a groove, you know? And that's, Liam soars at that, just this ambient, trippy kind of, he has a lot of synths and just is a, you know, kind of this mad genius in a way, I think. I just don't tell him, I call him a mad genius. But, you know, it just, like, has all these notebooks and is just really unique, you know. So I feel like when he pulled out that vibe on Boyfriend, and we ended up writing that song kind of during this hang, and we were drinking wine, and it was, like, nighttime, and we were all just laughing and feeling it, I was like, this is so different, but, like, I love it. Like, let's do it. Like,
yeah.
Let's bring some of this energy into my project. And I had already kind of started working on, like, Castles with this guy Nick, that like had this, like, kind of hard-hitting beat to it, because that was sort of more like what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sort of allowing the other people I brought into the project to bring a lot of their personality to the songs. But making Boyfriend did sort of was like an early, like, oh, I think we got something here. Now I'm making an album. Like, I had some, like, little things here and there prior to that, but
yeah.
It was like, okay, now we're headed in the right direction. And not long after I went home and AG came to the farm, and then it sort of just hit the ground running, like, everything started coming into place with the different collaborators and the songs. And
that's really amazing.
Yeah. I think, you know, Liam was such a gift in helping finish this record, because, you know, I didn't really know that it would take kind of the direction it did, but it sort of all ended up really fitting together. And not, you know, to take it one step further, which won't probably be obvious to anyone, but there is this sort of curiosity about otherworldliness, about things that didn't happen or roads that weren't taken, you know, in World Away or somewhere. Even Best Days, you know, I could have done this, but I did this instead. Really entertaining this whole, like, kind of, are there all these different possible realities that are existing simultaneously, like many worlds theory. And I think a lot of people won't get that, but I like that the kind of synthetic ambience that sort of carries through the record does sort of tie it all together.
That kind of, like, the connective thread that holds everything in a cohesive way.
Yeah, it's sort of like that sound that you imagine if you were just kind of floating in outer space, that's what it would sound like, that sort of you know, like, twinkly and sort of white noise and kind of creepy at times. And the album cover, it's like, you know, I'm underwater, but I also could just as easily be kind of just floating up in the stars.
I was curious about that cover. Did you shoot it while in actual underwater? Like,
I did.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought, and you know, not all of it sort of just came together, and I got so lucky because I was actually at a wedding on a lake in Arkansas, and this amazing photographer was there, and he's like, does anybody want to, like, be my model and let me shoot them underwater? It's like, I'll do it. And got all the pictures back and was like, oh God, these are amazing.
What are the odds?
Yeah. Well, it was just sort of a magical wedding with magical people. I think it all was supposed to happen how it did. But
that's beautiful.
But yeah, so I think that there is this, like, other level to the record, which maybe people won't get, but of this, like, kind of, and the new video for Best Days kind of has it, which might, I tried to make it make sense, but in a simple way of, like, kind of like all these different realities existing and sort of being stacked next to each other into infinity, and like many worlds theory.
Yeah.
Like, simultaneous realities existing. So, yeah, there's a little bit of that in there, too, with the sound of the record having that sort of what you think outer space would sound like peppered through it.
I love that. You know, what's a song off the album that has yet to be released that you're dying to have people hear, or specifically a song you're looking forward to see how people react? Because sonically, for me, when I was listening to the album, it feels very you, but also very different to stuff you've done before. And imagine with you having an album like this in your pocket, you must be thinking, like, man, when people hear this, they're just gonna go, like, what the hell?
I mean, I think Crazy Girl for me is a fun one and is cool because, like, I don't really usually, like, use my falsetto even. So I'm kind of just out of, like, variety's sake. Like, I'm excited for people to hear Crazy Girl. Sand, I really like, because I think it sort of still, like, can embody a little bit of what I've done in the past. I made it with Bill Reynolds, who I did my first EP with, and he always brings, like, that certain sound that we have together that has this kind of chill natural thing about it. I can't even explain it. Peace. I really like peace because it's, you know, so like kind of hopeful, but also has this like cool beat. I don't know. I guess if I had to choose one, like maybe Crazy Girl, like because it kind of kicks off the record and it is sort of like a different side of me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Before I let you go, playing live has grown into being such a big part of your life. And I mean, when I met you last, it was in the context of you playing live. You're playing at Barry Barrow, which is such
yes.
a beautiful space.
Yeah.
I'm curious, in what ways do you suspect the live show will now change and evolve now that you have this new album?
I, for the first time ever, am like receptive to using like sounds, not tracks. I won't ever just play to a track,
yeah.
but I used to be very purist about like, no, every sound has to be made by the band
yeah.
on the stage. Like, we're not one of those groups. Like, we're not going to be like, let
like
a robot do it.
Yeah, like just like guitars and drums on stage only.
Yeah, kind of, because I mean, and I still feel that way. I mean, it's kind of cheating. Touring is so expensive. I understand why people do it.
Mm-hmm.
To like just have everything be so like triggered and tracked that it's like, is anyone even doing anything up there? Or is this just like they're pretending?
Yeah.
You know, I think people pay a lot of their hard-earned money to go see concerts. They don't just want to see a bunch of people hitting a play button.
Yeah, of course.
Well, or maybe they do, because I think that they
well,
do.
It does work.
It works. So for the first time, though, like, are my drummers incorporated, like, some, like, you know, extra bits onto this little fancy pad. It's not quite an MPC, but it's some kind of thing where he can kind of trigger sounds with his drumming.
Yeah.
So I think what people can hopefully expect is that it's still a very raw, real, you know, high energy, emotional for me, you know, bringing it show, but that that the songs may sound a bit more like the recording and not quite as free form.
Yeah.
But then who's to say that I wouldn't go back to doing whatever. But you know, for the promotion of Castles, I'm really trying to, with my new band, be like, I want the songs to actually sound like what the recordings sound like.
Yeah.
So I think they've done a really great job of pulling the elements together. And just, you know, I probably will talk too much. I'll probably tell people weird stories on stage. And
people love stories.
A band will look at me like, okay, can we please just play the next song? Like, stop talking.
I forget who I was talking to a few days ago. Oh, I was talking to Phoebe Bridgers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we were talking about that whole dynamic of, like, bantering and playing live. And she was being very candid about how she feels like she needs to banter a lot less. Like, she feels like she almost holds people hostage when she banters.
Yeah.
But I was telling her how, like, Adele does it, and, like, people must love that. Like,
I mean, I guess the thing, too, is, like, if you're doing it because you want to do it, and it's what's happening naturally, then I think it's fine. If you do it because you feel like you have to do it, then it can get awkward.
Yeah.
And I think that there really is this thing just of like, well, if people don't like it, like, you can't please everybody. I
sure.
mean, I think I go through phases where I really just am like, well, I don't know, I'm cool with myself. I don't I guess I can't worry about what people would think of me. It's none of my business. But
yeah.
you know, then other times I go through insecure phases and it's like, oh well, did I talk too much or did I do this thing? And at the end of the day, I mean, you just have to be yourself, so.
That's true, that's all you can do. Leslie, thanks for catching up with me. It's great talking to you.
Yeah, great talking to you.
Gave up all of my power and forward. It's like I've been out of my mind.